One of the things, Brian, one of the things Brian mentioned earlier is the number of pounds of fiber that are consumed in textiles. And coming from two different backgrounds, one being traditional textiles, one being now wovens. Traditional textiles, you got to open it, you got to card it, you got to draw it, you got to spin it, you got to warp it, you got to slash it, you got to weave it, you got to do all that stuff, you got to knit it. I mean, it's such a long process from when that bale is open to when you get a final product that it's a lot of labor involved in that. Even though you've got good equipment, even though you've got good technology, there's still a lot of labor involved in that. And one of the reasons why those industries are going down in the U.S. is because of that. There's so much better production from a labor standpoint from overseas than there is in the U.S. One of the advantages of nonwovens is when you open a bale or a needle punch line, about 15 minutes later, you got fabric coming out the other end. So you open it, you card it, you cross-lap it, you needle punch it, you do something else to it, and you got product. So it is an application that is good for the U.S. economy, good for cotton in the U.S. Okay, make sure I got this right. One thing, did I skip through? Yeah, I sure did. Needle punching is defined as a technology in which the fabric is formed by means of fiber entanglement achieved by repetitive penetration of a barbed needle through a preformed dry web, carded, cross-lap, or air leg. What I'm going to review briefly today is the history of typical needle punch lines, the felted needle itself, which is the most important part of the needle punch process, and those equipment manufacturers think they're most important, and they are. But I am going to go through needle looms and also popular needle punch fabrics. And one of the things about the fabrics, again, going back to a comment I made about cotton and ways to improve it and from the cotton itself, a lot of the products that are made with needle punch, strength is important. One of the things that gives the strength is the length of the fiber, and that's a limiting factor on cotton because it is shorter than you can get from a man-made fiber. But there are definitely markets available there, and we are constantly working. We work some with North Carolina State. We're working with DB down in New Orleans, and work with another lab line. So we try to work on developing new products all the time because it's in benefit of us as well as cotton manufacturers. Needle punching was started in the early 1800s. Loom were able to fibers in the map by use of barbed needles, thus permitting products of felts using almost any type of fiber. What happened between the 1800s and probably the early 1950s is not much. Didn't do a whole lot. There's a patent of an early 1800s. What happened in the 1950s is another natural fiber, animal hair, became very prevalent in needle punch. A lot of needle punch operations started taking place around places that had, the manufacturing wool or animal hair or whatever. And the byproduct was fairly inexpensive. Wool natural fibers were used. Basically, you baled it and you needle punched it on old equipment. One of the things about needle punch operations is that this particular product went into a carpet nap. The thing that we have to overcome as an industry, needle punch has to overcome as an industry, is a low-tech image. Because it doesn't cost as much to manufacture, because of the low labor cost, because of the quickness in running, everybody says, well, it's a cheap product, and it's not. There's a lot of different developments out there, and when I get to the segment on the different type of markets, you'll see the low end and the high end. Needle punch line, typically got a card, it's got a cross lapper, goes into and back front, explain this too, it goes into the compressive back feed system that feeds that into that first needle. Very important to have a good compressive back feed system, otherwise the material, when it leaves this midpoint, will balloon back up again and it won't go through needling very well. Here's a typical geotextile line. The card is not shown, but it's a card, goes into a cross lapper. Several layers of fat, of fiber on top of that. It goes into the compressive back feed system into a needle loom. This particular line has draft rolls, which increase the machine direction speed, also increases the machine direction strength. Typically on a carded cross lap web, your fibers are laying in cross machine direction. If you're checking strengths and machine direction versus cross machine direction, your cross machine direction strengths are generally higher. the draft will increase line speed plus pull the fiber in machine direction, which helps lock those fibers in place a little bit more, thus increasing machine direction strength. This one has a finish limb, which is a quad, two boards on top of two boards. You can have some kind of tenor, heat fret, heat set, calendar roll, then a wind up. Now, that's a typical geotextile line, but that same line is similar to on filtration. You take this one out, and you have shiny tabs, but lines set up similar to that. And here's a picture of the needle punch operation. You've got the needle beam that's going up and down. You've got the needle board with the needles in it. The top plate's called the stripper plate. It kind of explains itself when the needles come back up. Any fibers on here strip off. The bottom plate's where the fibers rest, the bed plate. The needles go through the fiber, push, and barbs entangle those fibers in the barbs, push it through the bed plate, and that interlocks those fibers together. You have to build the boards. This is a needle going into a board. You can see how small these needles are. You need to put them in straight. You don't want to put them in at an angle otherwise, or bend them a little bit otherwise, you can cause some defects in your material, or the needle could break. Another thing you want to do if you're in a needle punch operation is have a safe storage area, that supports that board all the way across so you don't warp the board later on. You also want a storage area where you're not going to put any stress or beam the points on anything. If you put the points before up against the wall, you're going to mushroom the points, it's going to decrease the efficiency of that needle. A needle punch operation obviously goes through a triple plate, into the needle will gap, or into the gap area where it picks up the fibers and goes through the bed plate. A needle consists of a top crank, a shank, intermediate blade, or tapering intermediate blade, a taper working blade, the barbs, the point. There's also a single reduced needle that doesn't have an intermediate blade. Different needles for different applications. Primarily, this kind of needle will be used on low-end products, and this will be used on high-end products and high-speed looms. The major part of the needle itself is the barb. Things that can vary, the barb depth can vary, the barb angle, that angle right there. The probe length can vary, the probe angle can vary, whether the needle has kickup or not. Kickup is like you align from here to here, if the amount of that barb picks up above that. Generally on products that require good surface appearance, you don't have kickup. A kickup does not actually help entangle fibers. Fiber is going to move into that bar naturally without a pickup. Actually, all things being equal, if I had the same bar depth, one without pickup would be more efficient than one with pickup. Rounded bar versus cut barbs. Old technology, again, many years ago, needles would chisel or cut out. You can see how sharp those edges are. If you needle punch your fiber, you're going to break the fiber, you're going to damage it. More preferred to have a form bar with rounded, soft edges so that the fibers can be entangled without cutting your damage. This is our foster form bar. Most of the patents in have run out, but Foster, the founder of our Foster, Edison Foster, patented probably 20 or 30 different kinds of needles over the years. That's showing pickup. If you look at pickup versus probe depth, the total is the total bar depth. And here's a needle with a lot of pickup. Here's one with no pickup. You can see you align there with no pickup. You can see a little speed slope right there. Barb angles, 5 degree, 10 degree, 20 degree. What are the advantages of 5 degree and 10 degree versus 20 degree or even 30 degree? 5 and 10 degree are primarily used where surface appearance is important. If I'm kneeling into some type of substrate, I want to minimize the damage that substrate, whether it be a slick woven film or a fun bond material. I don't want to damage it very much. Going to a small barb angle will help reduce the damage to the substrate. Probably 80% of the needles we produce, 75 to 80, that are in the market, not just us, are in the market. Our 20-degree barb angle is the most common. Again, these are primarily used where you're trying to improve surface appearance or you're needling into some type of substrate. You want to minimize damage to that substrate. Blade shapes. The most common is the triangular blade. The shadows represent the size of the needle, the working blade, and where the barbs are. This is called a star blade or four-sided needle. Add an extra side. The advantage of that is, as it goes through there, you've got one more area to pick up fibers. Gives you a little bit more strength and higher physical properties. A very popular needle for kids textiles, where strength is very important. This is a pinch blade with bars opposite each other. You can try and maybe increase strength in one direction versus another. Machine direction or cross machine direction, you can utilize a pinch blade needle and orient it to direction to try and improve to help balance that MBCB strength. This is a conical needle, very similar to this. The difference is, this is a comb-shaped needle. It increases the diameter, it goes up towards the taper intermediate blade. Same diameter here as it is here. Use this needle primarily to reduce breakage on low end good. It's not as efficient as this needle. So if you're trying to get more strength, this is a better needle. If you're trying to decrease breakage, this is a better needle. This also helps the airflow going through the bed stripper plate. Some people have problems with fiber building up in the bed plate plugging. This needle helps reduce that plugging by increasing the airflow. Barb spacing. This is most of the barb spacing, although there's other barb spacing combinations of these. Regular barb, RB, medium barb, MB, both barb, CB, high density barb, HDB. This is a high density barb paper felt where all the needles are on one edge. Why do they use that? They don't want to, again, minimize damage to the monofilament substrate, and they orient the barbs away from the flow of the material so it doesn't cut and damage that monofilament. Well, this is a star blade, a pinch blade. Wherever you have a CB, MB, or A, or RB with the A after it, you simply move the barbs close to the point, get a distance from the point of the first barb, 3.2 or 6.4 millimeters. The advantage of doing that is I can get the same number of barbs going through the material at low penetration depth. And while we're talking about penetration depth, penetration depth is simply the distance that point travels from the surface of that plate down. Penetration depth, basically the only two things from a needle punch standpoint that you can change without changing your fiber, without changing your equipment, and without changing your needles, is changing punches per square inch. How many punches are actually in a square inch material, or changing penetration depth, how far that needle goes through the bed plate. And both those, up to a certain point, increase physical properties. That the penetration is equal to, or means the distance of point travel through the surface of the bed plate. I want to go back real quick, but this is a typical cotton needle, one that makes quilts, blankets, that kind of thing. What it is, 15 by 18 by 38 by 3 RBA. Basically, those numbers mean it's a 15 gauge thickness crank and shank, 18 gauge intermediate, 38 gauge working blade. RBA gives you the spacing, which you had the other things. The next line, I might go back and forth, but the next line said F26-3B, means it's the form bar. The form barb has got a 20 degree barb angle. The barb depth is 3,000 inch. D is our nomenclature for no kick up. So you can look at the description of the needle and tell exactly what it is. One thing you can do is, it is 20, means the diameter of working blade 1,000 inch. That's the total number of barbs, that's the barb depth, and that's the barb angle. So I got RBA spacing. Say I'm penetrating 8 millimeters. 8 millimeters means I have 3 barbs going through that bed plate. I need a little more work. I need a little more fiber entanglement. How far do I have to go to get one more barb to the bed plate? I have to go above 9.5. So I can make adjustments in my process based on the bar spacing, how many barbs are going through there, to help increase fiber entanglement. Again, up to a certain point. At a certain point, you start getting to point of diminishing returns. And I'll get into that in a second. Here's another one. What's the difference between this one and this one? They're both the same, right? All the differences right here. Right, one's a closed barb and one's a RBA. The advantage of going to a CBA needle, go back to 8 millimeter penetration depth. Here I've got 3 barbs going through. 8 millimeter penetration depth on the CBA. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 arsenal grooves. Same penetration depth, much more efficient needle. Where would I use this needle? Where would I use this needle? This needle primarily on a first loom or entrance side, where the bat is very lofty. You don't want to put the arms so close together that they fill up the fibers too quick. You don't get a good uniform distribution of the fibers that way. So use this needle on the entrance side and this needle on the exit side. On your machine, what you might do is on the entrance board, use something like an RBA. On the exit board, use something like a CBA. And the CBA is a finished, what we call a finishing needle. An RBA is what we call a tapered or entrance limb needle. By the way, these needles are both used for virgin fiber, mixed fiber, high-end stuff. The Warren company uses similar needles in Seattle and North Carolina. This needle is a much coarser gauge needle, 38 gauge versus 25 gauge, much bigger. 15 gauge by 17 by 25, 3.5 MBA. Much deeper bars. Look at these bars. They're all 3,000 an inch. Here, the sixth bar needle, the first three are 7, the next three are 8. Conical shape, cone shape. You're not going to make a finished product, a nice quality finished product with this. This is the low end stuff. This is stuff like Joan Fibers. They use a lot of boats, a lot of low grade cotton to make bedding products, spring cover products. The conical shape helps reduce breakage. Because they've got such a low grade of material or raw material, the big bars help to tangle it better. MBA spacing helps get it in and out quicker. And this needle is primarily used, somebody mentioned cosmetic pads being a product for cotton. Parkdale Mills in North Carolina started a needle punch operation up about a year ago. They recently bought U.S. Cotton, which had a needle punch operation. American Fiber in North Carolina has a needle punch operation. They make cosmetic pads. Go into Walmart, Kmart, someplace like that, and buy those sleeves of cosmetic pads. They were probably needle punch. You break a needle on that, it's really going to be a problem because of the liability. But they go through a very elaborate setup on making sure no needle break or get through the even that you break. That's one reason why this is conical shape and helps reduce breakage. Again, look at the difference in the bar depth. Here's 7, 2.5, or 2.3 and 3, even smaller than these. So it's not going to carry a lot of fiber, it doesn't have to. The bigger the bar, the more load it's under. Therefore, the higher the breakage rate might be. The bigger the bar, the more fiber it's going to carry, so it's under more load. So you go to the small bar to the conical shape. Still a pretty fine gauge needle, 36 versus 38. Makes a nice product. I'm not going to say it never breaks in their process, but all those companies have a very elaborate system for detecting any metal that might make it through. Mentioned punch per square inch. The formula for that is how fast the needle goes up and down, divided by the line speed times the needle pattern. Needle pattern simply means if I have an inch wide section from the front of the board to the back of the board, how many needles is in that inch? I think Max said the olive was 4,000. That's 4,000 needles per meter on the lab line the olive would get. So you either measure inches or meters. Products that require low punch per square inch or the low end goods, the waist pad, shouting, if you need law, you don't want to put a lot of punch in because the punches give you more density. Punch per square inch, geotextile, filters, synthetic leather. Just as an example of that, if you're running the needle loom at 1,000 RPM at 8.3 feet a minute, which is 100 inches per minute, the needle pattern is 5,000 needles per meter, which is 127 needles per inch. You're putting in 1,270 punches per square inch, 497 punches per square centimeter. What does that mean? If I cut a square inch out of material, that's how many times the needle hit. Advance per stroke is simply how far the material moves forward. Every stroke the loom goes up and down. You take the line speed divided by the RPM. In the previous example, the line speed was 100 inches. RPM was 1,000. Advance per stroke is 0.1 inches. Why is that important? the higher the advance per stroke, the more that needle's going to deflect. And needles do break. So you want to keep that number down on a single punch operation where the machine is not going like this, which is a quad. You want to keep that number probably less than 3/4 inch to an inch. On a quad machine with the needles on top of each other, you want to keep that number under 1/2 inch. Mentioned before about punch per square inch, and this same graph would be the same for penetration depth, but you know, this is 1 pass, 2 pass, 3 passes. What you're basically doing is the more you increase punch per square inch or penetration depth, the higher my physical property might get, the better my product is. And then at a certain point, I start getting the point of diminishing returns and start degrading, start tearing the fibers apart. What is that? We have guidelines to kind of give you a starting point of where you should be where your punch per square inch should be and what your penetration depth should be. And then from there, kind of a trial and error to determine the best settings for your equipment and your process. One of the things that happens in needle punch operation is needles do wear, that you wear out, generally in the saddle area first. Actually, if this is a 20-degree barbed angle, when they first start wearing, it actually becomes a little bit more like 25 or even 30-degree barbed angle. At some point in time, it can end up getting like this. In a needle punch operation, if I'm penetrating that needle into the material, is that needle going to break before that needle? That needle's going to break first. This is under load. It's got pressure on it. It has no pressure. Like putting hypodermic in. So we recommend some kind of rotation program. In this particular diagram, we're showing a third, a third, a third. So you determine that your life was 60 million strokes up and down, which is on the low end, but that's typical. So in this particular example, what I would do is I set this up and change it at 20 million. This up 40 million, this is 60, this is 80, this is 120, so forth, so on. So at any one period of time, I've got a section of new, old, medium, and used needles. So what happens is, instead of waiting until I get customer complaints or waiting until my off quality gets to an unacceptable level, which is down here, and then changing all the needles at one time, I'm doing it a little bit at a time. Not really using that many more needles. My customers are happier, less off quality. The majority of my customers do have rotation programs, some of them don't. When you're building boards, either new boards or rotation, we always recommend that you build boards in this direction rather than this direction. And this drawing of that. We don't recommend this. This is the box, this is the box, this is the box. Why recommend like this rather than this? We're ISO certified, we have certain specifications. Everybody that has quality specifications know that they mean you live within those specifications. But you still have some variation. You have the low end and the high end. So if I've got a box of needles that would be 3,000 inch feet hard, and I got a box of 2.9 and the one that's 3.1, just plan to have any variation between those boxes. If I put them side by side by side, if there is some variation with a target or somebody else's needle, it's going to show up a little bit more readily this way than it would this way. So when you're building boards, you should always build them like that. I mentioned breakage, needle alignment, how the needles are aligned in the vents or play holes. The boards are worn. Some boards use inserts, but the inserts are worn. The equipment's old, you got a lot of vibration. The vents per stroke too high. If the needle's too aggressive, the fiber quality is not right, or you're using a substrate. One of the things about needle alignment is that if I do a circle right here, and that's a stripper plate, and I put that needle right in the middle of that stripper plate, now I got brand new loom, I got great alignment, left to right, front to back. What I would rather do, instead of putting it right in the middle of that stripper plate hole, if the material is flowing this way, is move that needle to the anchor side. I got more room for that needle to deflect before it gets to the other end of the stripper plate, so I can run higher advantage of the stroke. But you can do certain things to help control needle breakage. Selecting the correct needle is one of them. Here's the major needle loom producers. Unfortunately, I don't have Techno playing up there. D-Lo, Fair, and Aslin are considered the top three. They all have good quality. They all have very high-speed machine. They all have good technical support. Here's some other Shishing. Automatec's actually a techno plant is a new name for the two wind companies. Those are all great knee looms also at much lower cost. They don't necessarily have the same speed that's the D-Low Baron had. They don't have all the technical advantages that D-Lo Farron has on that, but for certain applications, they're wonderful machines to try to make real fast products or commodity products, and you need to put out the pounds per man hour, then you want to run real high-speed looms. Here's some different types of loom configurations. These triangles represent boards, single board down, single board up, double board down, double board up. Offset machine, here's a quad with four boards on top of four. Here's four boards down, here's a rotary tacker. Where the trigger plate, bed plate are actually drums that have holes in them, and the board, the time that goes in and out of the hole. It really helps control draft, helps control reeling, but the board is so small you don't get a lot of punch per square inch. The plant, so the boom going in to USDA is this type machine. One of the things I heard Max say, and don't mean to.
He's gone.
Do what?
He's not here. He is gone.
Okay. one of my concerns on offset machines is a great machine. But when you can vary the speed, which you said you can, between these two boards, you need to be careful because one of the things about needling is that each set of boards gives you a certain harmonic pattern. As it goes in and out, at certain RPMs, at certain line speeds, you get a little bit different pattern coming out of the end of the loom. What happens when you have an offset machine and you're running it at different speeds is that pattern is going to be changing over here. You're not going to have a good, consistent product because at some point in time, both those boards are going to be in the loom, the material at the same time. At some point in time, they're going to be doing this. So you're going to get the time that material can move through those two boards. Without needles being in them, it's going to change with every stroke of the machine because it's going to be different speed year and year. I have customers that run them that way. My preference is that they run the same speed and go in and out at the same time and out at the same time. It gives you more free transport time of that material, less dwell time, less draft, generally a better product. And here's a needle loom. It's got a angled stripper plate. The advantage of that is that when that lofty web goes in there, it doesn't take long for that needle to compress very quickly. Here, instead of the material bouncing around, because it's real tight here and real loose back here, it stays about the same all the way back. So you've got the gap setting here, again, is much wider here than it is back here. This is a double board down needle loom. This is an offset with double boards, similar again to the one at USDA, but it's got two boards on one side, two boards on the other. I mentioned quad, it's kind of hard to see the boards, but there's two boards here and two boards here. But this advanced the quad, but one advantage of the quad has got a lot of needles in one machine, so you put a lot of punch per square inch. The disadvantage is because you've got that dynamic where the needles are coming in and out at the same time, the material can't move very far before the needle goes in. So you can't run as high then for stroke. You've got more draft, you've got more needle deflection on a quad than you would, say, if I had two separate plumes, one that had double board down, one that had double board up, or I had an offset. Key needle punching parameters, the proper felt of the needle design, the correct number of punches per square inch, the correct penetration depth, the proper fiber length, cram communication. You left earlier, but one of the things about cotton is that right there. That hurts cotton in some applications on needle punch because of the length. Select the correct needle style depends on the fiber type, the denier, the fabric weight, the fabric density, tensile requirements, surface hand requirements, loom type, and needle density. Talk a little bit about those. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on different markets other than to say they're all over the world, in the U.S., talking to Paul earlier, our business from a volume standpoint stayed pretty consistent where traditional textiles is going down. We have actually grown a little bit from last year to this year. there are companies that close like there are everywhere else. There are companies that open up like there are everywhere else. But because it's such, it's not very heavily dependent on labor. We do feel like it's some installations that import. In North America, there's close to 300 companies, most of them in southern USA. I did a survey at the end of the year. In just the south alone that I cover, there's over 350 looms. That doesn't mean there's 350 companies just in the south, but one company might have one loom, one company might have two, one might have 10. But in the eastern USA, they're mostly older companies, and Midwest and West, they're pretty scattered. Top markets, home furnishing, which covers a lot of things. I have some market information in the back. I'll show you that. Automotive, geotextile, filtration. Those are all markets where, again, the long fibers help because of strength, but filtration might be something. There might be something in there that could be replaced. Cotton could replace synthetic fibers. In Europe, there's over 400 punchers. Most of them are fragmented and usually more technical products. England, Germany, France, Italy, the top European markets. Japan, China would be number one. Thailand, Taiwan, Korea, India, top Asian markets. It's not going to read all those, but those are just some, not all, some of the neoplunge fabrics that are out there. Automotive, a bunch of stuff in cars are now being neoplunge or covering. The shoddy insulation pads, the catalytic converter pads, hood liners, transmission zippers, headliners, package trays. You know, pretty much, if you've got a cloth material in your car, it's novel and generally needle punch. So get in your car and that might be a non-woven product. Here's a cotton product. This slide was courtesy of Jones Fibers. This is a fire retardant denim product they put over springs. Meets the new FR requirements in California. Obviously, they put something on it, an additive to meet those requirements, but you can see by at least these pictures that it's low-end cotton where they're using a very coarse gauge needle to minimize breakage. This is a slide courtesy of the Warm Company, or the needle and quilt and blankets, some of the craft belts, and all cotton. This is just some cosmetic pads, talked about that, and the companies that are doing that. Again, Parkdale Mill started about a year ago, and they bought U.S. cotton recently, so it's a good business for us and a good business for them, too. These are products that aren't necessarily made from cotton, but home furnishing, the spring covers, some of them made out of coconut, some of them made out of jute fiber, some of them made out of natural fiber, so there is some possible opportunities there. Here's a jute and shoddy product for the bedding industry for the spring covers. Home furnishing, this is the low-end side of it. Those are actually carpet pads. Here's a coconut fiber pad. Wall covering and floor covering, if you go into Home Depot, Lowe's, and you see a roll of carpet, it's a needle-punch product. Basically what they do is they needle-punch it through one operation and then send it back to another machine. But instead of have barbs on it, it has a fork on it. It goes through a stripper plate, goes through the material, and goes through a lamella plate on the bottom, and can put either ribs like that or patterns like that in the material. That's another floor covering. Automotive door panel. One of the things about needle punch products and needle punch fiber is it's easily molded because of the way it's made. So applicable to being molded for door panels, package trays. Filtration, fiber needle punch operation. That one actually has a substrate in it, been needle punched. I mentioned geotextiles a couple of times. Basically, geotextiles means it goes into the earth. This is a clay liner company in Georgia and Wyoming that basically take a layer of non-woven, put clay on it, cat litter, basically a non-woven on top of it, needle punch that together in a sandwich. Cat litter, when water hits it, reacts and allows that no seepage in the pond or landfill liner. Construction, ditches, geotextiles. This is a low-end needle punch carpet, mostly marine. boats, whatever, have needle punch carpet, and even the holes, fiberglass holes, some companies go through needle punch operation to make those. Synthetic leather is mostly an Asian product because of some environmental issues. But if you, again, if you buy a synthetic basketball, synthetic shoes, any stores, went through a needle punch operation. Tennis balls used to be made out of knitted products, and now they're almost exclusively made out of needle punch. Somebody mentioned earlier about the medical applications. It can be needle punch, it can be other nonwovens, but there's a growing area there. We have a new plant starting up up north that's going to be in the medical application. Can't really talk about it other than say that. Cabin liners on airplanes. Talked about low-end versus or low-tech versus high-tech. The space shuttle tiles actually go through needle punch operation. All your airliner brake pads go through needle punch operation. So it is very high-tech, and it is very, and continues to grow that way. And somebody mentioned in one of your early presentations too that obviously in the commodity markets, you need to make it fast, put out the camera per hour. If you get into a technical market and get niche markets, then you can increase your margin. Low-end footwear, this is just an absorbent product around equipment for safety reasons. This is a company, a very innovative company, that needle punched the felt into a tube, sewed it together, it was impregnated with resin, and could repair a damaged drain or pipe in a matter of hours versus days a week. They inverted the pipe, put water on it, the water activated the resin, and fixed the damaged pipe. That's not a damaged material, that's just water flowing through it. That patent has run out, and there's couple other companies that are doing that now. This is another ingenious guy that took natural fiber jute, impregnated with grass seeds, but growing on dirt, grew on plastic, but didn't have to water as much, didn't have to dig it up, roll it up in the side. So, you know, just some ideas that, you know, somehow that might be applicable to some kind of cotton product. High temperature insulation is a needle punch product, the big ovens you have. And that's it. This is just our quality control guy checking the points of our needles. And in needle punch, I apologize this in advance. In needle punch, there's never a dull moment. You always get the point. Stay sharp. Don't be a prick. And your punch will always be felt.